Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, April 15th, 2017. This is episode 1380. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, internet reality, augmented reality, virtual reality. We don't really talk about real reality. No, not really. Kind of not really part of the show. It's just, it's got to have a chip in it. See, real reality doesn't have a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. It's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Oh, yeah, smart clocks. Cosmic Ray says, you could talk about smart clocks. I got a new clock that connects to the internet. An internet connect clock, not just for the time. This is created by some, it was, I think, a Kickstarter by some French fellas called La Métrique. And it shows you the time, but also shows you the weather and people tweeting at you and how many YouTube followers you have, all sorts of stuff that works with if this, then that. So cool. So, yeah, we could talk about internet-connected clocks. It's an alarm clock, too. And I don't know if you'd want it by your bedside because I don't like bright things shine. But I guess if you're one of those people who likes to look up and see what time it is in the middle of the night, this would be good. LAMETRIC.com. Anyway, I'll be playing with that later in the day. T-Mobile, big win for T-Mobile. Man, they're on a roll, aren't they? Number four carrier in the nation, but boy, they act like they're number one. They were the big winner in an auction. The FCC holds auctions from time to time of what they call spectrum, wavelength. The airwaves, what you're hearing this radio station on, for instance, are public property. We own those. And the Federal Communications Commission licenses them out so that there's not, 15 stations on one frequency. That wouldn't work. So, this station has a license. Every station has a license to operate at a certain frequency, and they have to follow rules. In fact, when I was a young DJ just starting out, I would have to take the meter readings. Do you still have to take meter readings, Michael? Or is that a thing of the past? Thing of the past, he said. like most of what I know, obsolete. But that was always fun. So you have to make sure you're operating within certain parameters. And then, quite famously, the FCC has some unregulated bandwidth. That's why Wi-Fi exists. 2.4 gigahertz, which the FCC doesn't think is that valuable. Certainly not valuable for radio stations. It's too high frequency. So AM stations are on kilohertz. And AM goes everywhere, right? You could sometimes hear an AM station in Texas if you're in Oregon because it skips off the atmosphere. It's just the nature of the lower frequencies travels well. And then FM's at megahertz, millions of cycles per second. Kilohertz is thousands. FM is megahertz. Geeks know this because of kilobytes and megabytes. It's the same thing. Megahertz. Hertz is a cycle per second. So you could say mega cycles per second. That's where the FM band is. And FM doesn't travel as well, right? And it gets confused by big buildings and downtowns and multipath, and it bounces off of things. But you could put more data across it, in effect. So FM sounds a little better than AM. In fact, it can be in stereo. That's changing. There is AM stereo. And there's HD and all this stuff. And I won't get too much into the details there. I don't want to bore Gianna because she's already, I can tell she's lost interest. How old is Gianna? 4 years old. Well, of course, she's not interested in spectrum and frequency and FCC stuff. In fact, her generation isn't going to care at all because everything's going to come to them over the internet. There's not going to be, she's not going to worry about this at all. Maybe not, because the internet in your house comes over 2.4 gigahertz. Originally, it was used for junk stuff, baby monitors. And the FCC says, we don't want to regulate baby monitors. We'll let you use that frequency as long as you're not too powerful. So they regulate it in that respect. You have to get the FCCB approval, right? You see that on the bottom of your electronics, on your phone and stuff like that. That says FCC tested it. It's not going to interfere unduly with other things. You know, the thing I'm most concerned about, of course, is emergency radio and military radio, things like that, air traffic control. You don't want to interfere with that stuff. That stuff could be bad if you interfered with that. So the FCC controls all of this. And from time to time, they shift bandwidth around. You may remember a few years ago, they went to the television stations and said, guys, new rule. You can't have that spectrum you used to have, the 700 megahertz spectrum. It's too good for you. You don't need that. We're going to make you go digital, and we're going to move you to a higher frequency. Remember what a big deal? Yeah, that was a big deal, right? Well, I'm not sure where this 600 megahertz came from. Maybe it was part of the same deal, but the FCC has been almost for a year now auctioning off the 600 megahertz band. Yeah, they got it from TV, and they're offering it to the highest bidder. Probably the cell phone industry. That's what happened with the 700 megahertz band. Verizon got most of that. Well, T-Mobile won this auction. $7.99 billion. I think we can safely say that's $8 billion. Close enough. 100,000 here or there, who cares? $7.99 billion. They got a total of, you don't just license it nationally, you have to license it locally. So they got a total of 1,525 licenses all over the country on this 600 megahertz bandwidth. This is good stuff. T-Mobile won about half of all the spectrum available. This is the stuff that goes through walls and buildings. It's why you can use your cell phone inside your house or inside your office. Because this remember, the lower the bandwidth, the better it travels. So the cell phone companies wanted this a lot. So now this is good. This is a big deal. Now your phone probably doesn't do it yet. Qualcomm has announced, we're going to make chips for the 600 megahertz band. And later this year, you'll start getting phones with the 600 megahertz band. And T-Mobile will start rolling out LTE coverage in the 600 megahertz band. So this is big news for T-Mobile. It means their coverage will be... They've traditionally, as I guess every carrier is all right in a big city, right? Because it's a dense population. They can put their towers, you know, on tall buildings. They don't, you know, they don't have people complaining about them in the countryside. So cities are always, you know, pretty equal. It's when you get out of the city, when you get in the country, you know, some carriers do better than others. And it's different in different regions of the country. So that's good news. Comcast bought some, too. Did you know that Comcast is getting in the phone business? That's great. You know, they're so beloved in the cable business. I'm sure they're going to be just very... But wait a minute. Nobody likes anybody in the cell phone business. So they'll just be joining a group of people equally hated. They took 73 licenses in 72 areas. The U.S. is about 416 territories. So, you know, maybe not even that much. They paid $1.7 billion. This stuff's expensive. By the way, it goes into our pockets, right? You'll get your check from the FCC. No, it doesn't. No, you won't get a check. But it does. It goes into the FCC's pocket. I don't know where it goes after that. U.S. Cellular spent a little money. AT&T spent a little money, both under $1 billion. Verizon and Sprint didn't get any new spectrum. So the auction is over. Comcast bought some. Why? Well, maybe you didn't know this, but they're going into the cell phone business. By June, if you are an Xfinity customer, you'll be able to get a service from Comcast. You know, the thing to be aware of is they don't own a lot of spectrum. They just bought some. But a lot of times when you're out of the house, they're going to buy Verizon spectrum. And when you're out of the house, they're going to probably end up using Xfinity Wi-Fi in many areas. Remember that? If you were an Xfinity customer and you had wireless, a Wi-Fi router from your cable company, from Comcast, that you were suddenly a Wi-Fi access point in your neighborhood. Remember, you know that? Yeah, unless you say no. Well, that's going to be part of their network. Oh, they had a plan, did they? Kind of thought that might be what they were up to. 8888 Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. Let's talk tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Does not go to the FCC. It goes to the Treasury. And to as compensation. Of course, some TV stations get money for giving up their frequencies and stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ever been to Memphis, Heather Hammond?
I'm going to put you on hold.
Put him on hold because I want to talk to you now. It's okay. I should probably give you a second before I turn on your mic.
I knew it was happening.
Yeah. You must have because I don't think you wear bunny ears normally.
I think they're hurting my head is what happens.
They're cutting off the blood supply to your brain. Happy, I guess, Easter's tomorrow, huh?
Easter Eve, yeah.
It's Easter Eve. Wow. All right. Well, happy Easter Eve. Heather, have you ever been to Memphis? You must have been. You're a music fan.
I haven't. It is a place I need to go.
It's the home of the Delta Blues.
Yep. This is Stax Records as well, right?
Stax, yep. It's where Elvis started, where Sun was, right? Elvis walked down. Still there. You can still record something, Sun. Well, since my baby left me. Anyway.
Yeah, you got to go visit there and get the cool
t-shirts. Yes, it's classic, right? It's just classic.
And Detroit. I got to get to Detroit.
The Motor City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been a lot of places because when we did the TV show, they would drag me to these places to meet people, say hi, sign autographs, that kind of thing.
You'll love that. Catch the flu.
It's fun. No, I never caught the flu. So
fly United.
Never fly United either again.
Poor United.
Oh, you say poor United?
In a way.
You feel bad for them?
Well, I have friends who are flight attendants, and I know it cannot be fun to be them this week.
You know what we'll do? We will talk to Johnny Jett, our travel guru. We'll get his take on this, right?
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll get the inside take on it. Meanwhile, you've been, nobody's on the line.
Well,
nothing
we'll
happening.
Talking,
where are all the people? Did I not say the phone number? I think I didn't. 8888 Ask Leo. Maybe because it's, holiday weekend. People are busy, biting the ears off of chocolate bunnies or something. Whatever it is people do.
Right, right.
8888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. But you do have somebody for me to talk to, I hope.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Are you an ear guy or a butt guy?
Oh, wait.
For the bunny.
What do you think?
Which do you eat first?
Eat the ears. They're the most available.
You're right, you're right. Okay.
And and then the bunny can't hear you eating its butt. Afterwards,
on the radio.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Michelle in Sierra Madre is asking about her iPad.
Okay, I didn't mean to shock you there. Hi, Michelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo Laporte. How are you?
I am very well. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much.
What's up?
Yes, I have a problem with my 5-year-old iPad 2, and every time I try to get on Facebook and some of my other apps like my Gmail, it keeps dropping out on me. I'll get a blank screen, and then a few seconds later, all the apps will pop back up on the screen, and I have to keep, I'll do this over again.
That's called a springboard crash or respringing or resprunging. And the reason is the interface, the things that puts the icon on the screen is on the Mac it's called the Finder, on Windows it's called Explorer, on iOS it's called the Springboard. And if it's a quick crash, like the screen grows blank and then it comes back, it's resprung. It means your springboard crashed, like any program. It is a program. It crashed. If it's a longer time and you get the white apple and the boot up, then that's a full system crash. So the good news is just the springboard.
Oh, okay.
And it may be that's all that's wrong.
Uh-huh.
Probably here's what I would try anyway is back up your iPad so you have all your data, anything that's on it. And you should do that regularly. And the easiest way to do that, you can do it using iCloud over the Wi-Fi. And they have Wi-Fi backup. But the best way to do this, the fastest, is to connect it to a computer running iTunes. Do you have such a thing?
I don't know that I do have such a thing.
That's a very common reaction when I say the word iTunes. Ooh.
Ooh.
Okay, well,
what is that? that.
You may never have backed up your iPad 2, I'm thinking.
I think you're right. I don't think I have done that, Leo.
Wow. Do you have a computer, Windows or Mac?
Yeah, but my Mac is, both of them are real old.
Oh, well, of course, your iPad's real old, too.
Yeah.
But, so, the best thing to do...
Uh-oh.
No, well, I'll just tell you, you don't have to do it, would be to back up, to connect it to a computer running a relative, it'd have to be fairly recent version of iTunes, not the latest. It'll when you first connect it, it'll say, oh, I'm backing it up. And it copies everything on there, which is nice. You should have that, right, in case you lose the iPad
or it
fails. If it's starting to fall apart, maybe that's, and it, you know, it's 4 years old, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Then once you do that, you can reset the iPad. There's a couple of levels of resetting it. One, you could just restore it from the computer. Two, you can go into the settings and erase all the data and settings. Three is something called a DFU, and this is a little bit of a harder thing to do. It's device firmware upgrade, and if you don't get it fixed any other way, you might need to do this, and it requires precise they don't want it to happen accidentally. But it requires precise timing in terms of holding buttons down and releasing buttons. In fact, the way I recommend people do DFUs is to go to YouTube and look up a video that walks you through it and follow their timing precisely, because that's what these things are for. Because it has to be exactly 5 seconds, and then you release the button, and it's just complicated as heck. But then it goes into a mode where you've just erased everything. In fact, the only thing the iPad can do is say, please connect me to iTunes. Please. And when you do that, then it puts a new version of the operating system on there. And it will just like it came from the factory. And it will offer you to restore your data. And at that point, it should fix all the problems you have. Have you, when was the last update you ran? What version of iOS are you running?
iOS 9.3.5.
Okay, we're at 10.3, but I don't know if you can go to 10 on the iPad 2. I think you can't.
I don't think so either.
So here's another option. This is really what Apple wants me to tell you.
Okay.
I didn't notice. You notice I didn't tell you this at first, because I don't want Apple to tell me what to tell you. But Apple did release the new iPad they just released. Starts at $329, and that's why they did this. It's literally for Michelle.
Literally, yeah.
Because there's a lot of people with iPad 1s and iPad 2s who can't get to the latest version of the operating system, which Apple wants you to do for a variety of reasons, for security, but also because app developers will be happier. So they've made the least expensive iPad they could. It's actually very good. No, it's not. You know, it'll be a pretty good upgrade for you. And it will solve all these problems, but it's $329. So those are your choices.
Well, those sound like pretty good choices to me, Leo. I appreciate you helping me with that.
Yeah, don't throw out the iPad 2, because that's, you know, you could use it as a remote, or, you know, maybe it'll be useful. Or when kids come over, you can give it to them and stuff like
that. Yeah, to play on and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. And then it's not a bad idea if you've got a computer to update it and put the latest iTunes on it, just for backing up. You should always be doing that. In fact, before you get your new iPad, back up your iPad too. You can restore it onto the new iPad.
Cool.
All right.
All right, Leo. Thank
you, Michelle. I gave you many, many options. Thank you. Great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We're talking high tech. No, normally Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, would be joining us at this hour, but I decided to give him the week off because I can answer those questions too. No, what is he doing? He's taking time off to do something fun. Oh, the Ren Fair. Scott. So here's some stuff some people may not know about Scott Wilkinson. He's our home theater guru. He's a home theater expert, audio and video. He writes for AVG. I'm sorry, the AVS forums. He does a podcast for us. But he also is a windy kind of guy. He says he can play any wind instrument. He's maybe famous for tuba, but he can play the French horn, anything, you know, any wind instrument. And apparently he's fond of a medieval instrument called, believe it or not, the sackbut. Yeah, 4-year-olds love that name. The sack bus. So I think he likes to go and dress in baggy tights and a little you know, puffy shirt and a funny hat and play the sack butt at medieval fairs. And his wife, Joanna, who's a wonderful singer, likes to sing. So that's what he's doing right now. And I presume, I don't know where the Renaissance Fair is, but if you know of a Renaissance Fair in Southern California, that's probably where you'll find Scott Wilkinson today. 8888 Ask Leo, my phone number. Let me remind you, the website is techguylabs.com, a great place to go if you're curious about what we talked about, if you're looking for links, if you want answers, or you're shouting at the radio. If you're shouting at the radio, I want to help you with your blood pressure. You don't need to shout at the radio. A, it's ineffective because, you know what, I can't hear you. And B, no one else can. And this way you can, and it's, of course, C, it's bad for your blood pressure. So if you go to techguylabs.com, you can see every show, every hour in every show, every question in every hour, and you can add your thoughts and comments there as well. So you can yell on the webpage there and say, Leo is wrong. This is how you do it. That kind of thing. TechGuyLabs.com. And I welcome that. I want to make this. It's a free site. It's wide open. There's no subscription required, no payment. I want to make this available to everybody forever. There's good search. So it just kind of be a resource. And then you can do what I know people do with our old shows. Because I've been doing this. I've been the tech guy since 2004. They sometimes listen to the old shows to laugh at the way technology used to be. Way back in '04, how did they survive? Mike on the line from Santa Monica. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Howdy, Leo. Leo, I've got a phone that I purchased in Hong Kong. It's called a Huey.
A Huey? And, H-U-E-Y?
No, sir. H-U-A-W-E-I.
Huawei.
Oh, thank you very much. You didn't tell me how it's pronounced.
Huey! I like that. I'm saying Huey from now on. Yeah, Huawei is actually, those are very good phones. Which one did you get?
I have a dual SIM. It's called the Rio L-O2.
Yeah, I don't think they sell that in the U.S. I've never seen that one.
I have never either.
Yeah.
So it's a dual SIM card. When I'm over in Hong Kong, Japan, it runs on a G4.
Yep.
But when I come to the States, it only runs G2, and I keep trying to contact
right. That's not necessarily something you can fix because it's one of the problems with buying international phones. Remember I was talking at the beginning of the hour about frequencies, right?
Okay.
So the phone has radios built into it, and it's a phone designed not for the U.S. market but for the Chinese market, which means the radio frequencies that phone supports, that the antennas support, that the built-in hardware supports, the software supports, are tuned not for our frequencies, but for theirs. And it may sometimes is the case that you can get phones that have all the frequencies, but it sounds like in this case you've got one that doesn't support. It works. It's a phone, right? And you can get slow speed connections, but you can't get LTE or 3G in the U.S. That's not surprising. It is an LTE phone, and as you say, LTE in China, no problem. So changing the SIM to a U.S. SIM, that won't fix it. It's a limitation of the radios in the phone.
I thought maybe there might be a software patch that I can get downloaded.
Not that I know of. Here's a place to go. If you're curious, there's a really great place for people who want to hack their phones.
I'm ready.
And I can't promise that it's going to be the right, that it's going to be hackable because it could well be a hardware problem, right? But if you want to get other ROMs on it or other operating systems or firmware on it and maybe figure it out a way to get a better, different frequencies, it's xda-developers.com. And what you can do there, they have a forum that's very extensive, has support for every Android phone known to man. You can enter in the precise model number of that phone, as you said, LG02, that kind of thing, whatever it is, and find out what the capabilities are.
So, quick question. If I buy another phone overseas, how can I know if it works in the States? Because, of course, they always say everything works here.
Yeah, well, they probably just don't know,
okay.
Right? What they mean is, and it does work, right? It just doesn't work well. It does. You can use it as a phone and with slow speed internet, just doesn't support our LTE bandwidth. So what you need to know before you go is, first of all, which carrier you're using in the U.S. and what frequencies that carrier supports, because they're not all the same.
Okay, so if I change carriers, I might get the 4G out of it?
Could be. You can do, this is an easy thing to do with Google or on the XDA Developers Forum, which is to look at that. It's actually the Huawei G8, I believe, is the name, at least in the U.S., that they use. Yeah. So I went to a great site called GSM Arena to look at the specs of the Huawei G8. And if you look at the specs, you can see generally it'll show you somewhere what bands it supports on the radio. And then you need to compare that with the bands that are required by your carrier. And then get a phone that supports those bands. It's a warning for everybody who buys phones on international websites and that kind of thing, which I used to do. If you haunt the Android enthusiast sites like XDA Developers or Reddit, if you haunt those sites, they will tell you, oh yeah, don't get this one. You can't get LTE on it. So you know the information is out there. You can't really count on the providers to give it to you, but the information is out there. I'm sorry. I mean, it's a nice phone. We're also, Dr. Mom in the chat room is giving me a link to a Wikipedia page that shows you the LTE frequency bands in each country. And I would presume you can also look at that and find out which carrier, which frequencies your carrier supports. So thank you, Dr. Mom, for that link. That's a useful link. We'll put that in the show notes. LTE frequency bands. It's kind of one of those things you have to piece together. But it does happen, you know, if you get the wrong phone. Yeah, we're going to see. I think it's nice to see the weather. Now, is that too small to read on a small screen? Probably is. That might be the problem. I kind of like it, though, that it's distracting, somebody says. Well, I think that's true. It could be distracting. It could be. That could be a problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Miles is in Long Beach. Hi, Miles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello,
Hi,
Miles.
Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing mostly okay.
Mostly. I bet your computer is driving you crazy, though.
Well, it's the TV, not the computer.
It's even worse.
Yeah. Short story, we had a power outage last week.
Uh-oh.
Loss of service.
Uh-oh.
When they got it back 2 days later, none of the HDMI connections on our plasma TV will get a picture. It keeps giving that lost signal, check cables. We put on new cables. They still don't work. We had the cable company come out and switch out the box. It still won't work. He got it to work with component. So we get picture through component connections. But
yeah, but you don't want that because that's not high def and it's not digital.
Right.
Actually, it is high def, but it's not digital. It's analog high def. So, okay. So here's the problem. When there's a power outage, often when the power comes back, it surges down the line.
Right.
And those surges are death to delicate electronic chips, components.
Right.
And probably what happened is a power surge hit your TV set, or more likely it didn't hit your TV set. It hit whatever was on the other end of the HDMI cable and shot and zapped power up your HDMI cable into the HDMI port on your TV set. What else is it just the cable box that's connected that way?
Well, we have a Roku.
Have you tried all of the, in other words, have you tried other HDMI inputs just to make sure that
we switched them
all up. Nothing works. Yeah.
Nothing is working.
And does it ever come on, or does it just takes a long time to handshake?
Oh, the television comes on, but it just says.
The picture never comes
signal.
On. Yeah, no signal.
The picture never comes on through the HDMI.
So I've had that happen to me with an AV receiver. And this was actually not from power outage. Sad to say, it was from a device, I think it was my Apple TV, that itself had a short in it, and it fried the AV receiver's HDMI channel, so none of the HDMI ports worked. I bought another one, it fried that one.
I took
the Apple TV out, and I bought a third one, and it works fine, and I've brought in both of those damaged amps to see, you know, to our tech shop. to see if there's a fuse. And what I'm hoping is there's a fuse on your TV, a micro fuse. It might be not accessible to you. It might be the tech has to open it up and look on the board. But if right. with any luck, a well-designed a device like that should have fuses. And so with any luck, it's just the fuse that blew.
Okay.
If not, if there's no fuse, it's not really an easily fixable thing, and you might have to buy a new TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's 7 years old. It's a plastic.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness. Well, and you can still use it. You know, I would see if you can get, and you're not going to send it back to Sony or whoever made it.
No. What actually, we called Samsung, and they said what we could do is call the other service center not too far from us.
Maybe. That's what I would do. What you want is kind of a shade tree electronics mechanic. Somebody who has some smarts, like our guy Burke, who can really dig into it and maybe... Because what Samsung would do is replace a lot of it, if not just replace the whole TV.
Oh, even though it's 7 years old?
Well, you know, it depends on how responsible they feel.
That's true. okay.
Really, the thing for everybody who's listening to know is you should... almost everybody should have... Everybody should have all sensitive electronics. That means anything with microchips in it on a surge protector, or ideally a power conditioning uninterruptible power supply, or UPS. That will prevent this kind of thing. And in fact, if you look around, you'll see even when you bought it, probably they recommended you get this. These things are kind of notorious.
Oh. Because we do have a power strip that supposedly has a surge.
Yeah, they're not great. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's been there.
And it didn't blow its fuse, so there you go.
Right.
Is the cable box on it, too? Is the cable box on it, too?
Yes, the cable box turns on, and it's surprisingly, the DVR is still recording.
But, okay, so here's what could have happened, right? This happens with lightning all the time. Maybe it didn't come through the electricity. Maybe it came through the coax, the cable coax, into the box, through the box, and out to your TV and shorted out. The most sensitive component was your HDMI chips. Those things are very sensitive. So with luck, you've got a fuse, but with no luck, you've got a new TV.
Yes, the new TV.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll call the tech center. That's not too far from
Don't spend too much to fix it, because probably a comparable TV these days is under $1,000. I mean, you should... how big is the TV?
It's a 64-inch.
Oh, that's pretty big, and it's plasma, which is nice. You kind of want to get it working again.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love...
They don't make plasma anymore, so
I know.
Plasmas are actually gold.
Yeah,
they're value. So you should also check, I mean, if you want to, Mike's reminding me in the chat room that you've got to make sure that your polarity and grounding are correct on your plugs. And that, you can buy a little device that do it, or have an electrician come out and do it. And if not, you should get that fixed.
Okay.
That's another thing to look for. He says a surge suppressor will not work if the outlet, will only work if the outlet's grounded. If you don't have a grounded outlet, there's nowhere for that juice to go.
Right. Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Not a tech guy, the tech service center.
Yes.
They can revive it.
Sometimes they do. And they'll probably say the same thing. There was a power outage, wasn't there? Yeah. Lightning's the worst. In fact, lightning, a lot of surge suppressors won't help. There's so much juice coming down through the electrical grid into the house that it just jumps fuses. It jumps everything. There's nothing you can do about it. So in that case, when you're buying a surge suppressor, what you're really buying is the insurance they offer. You'll see this, $1 million insurance, stuff like that. I think sometimes that's what you're really getting. It's the insurance. 8888-ASK-LEO. Oh, man, that's terrible, because the you can't buy new plasmas. And the old plasmas, they really were a really good technology. They really were. Some people have said, and I think this is probably true, and I've been meaning to do it, you can also get, and might be the best way to do it, whole house surge suppression. You obviously, your electrician will have to put that in. But you can, that goes out in the garage, and it protects the whole house with one device. Not a bad idea. If you're talking to an electrician, inquire about whole house power protection. James in Aurora, Colorado. Hi, James. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Okay, I'm in a wheelchair, and the way I have my phone mounted on my wheelchair, the camera is always facing down towards the ground.
Yeah, because you want to see the screen. Yeah.
And I can't physically pick it up to take a picture. So I have one of these Xiaomi action cameras.
Nice. The Yi Cam. I love those. I have one of those, too.
They're like a GoPro knockoff for like $80.
Right, and they're quite good.
Right. So what I want is there a way, maybe an app, that I can make that camera as the main camera so that it can be used for Snapchat, Facebook Live?
Oh. You could do that with a computer, but I don't know of any phone that will let you do that.
There's not like an app that could do that or anything that could...
Yeah, what it would like to do is... So the Yi Cam, you're connecting probably by a Wi-Fi, right? Not physically, right? So you'd need an app that could see a Wi-Fi camera. I don't know of any apps that will do that on a phone, but maybe the chat room does. That's a great question. As you know, you can, when you're using Skype or something on a PC, you choose the input for the camera.
Right.
So you can use anything you want. But I've never seen a phone have that capability or apps on the phone. Certainly an iPhone will not be, almost certainly not be able to do it. An Android phone, though, that's a much more open platform. I could see somebody figuring that out.
Well, if somebody's out there listening, make that happen. And I think it would be not for just my use, but for general use.
You know, if, for instance, there is the Yi Cam app, and you can use the Yi Cam app and take pictures with it and see what the camera's seeing. All action cameras support that. So that app can do it. I think that they need to make a phone app that will do the same thing. I mean, we know the Yi Cam can see the Yi camera.
Right. It's cool for Snapchat, you know.
Yeah, I agree. That's just so... You know, now that I think about it, since you can make a camera app that sees the output of the camera, and even on the iPhone you can do that, why doesn't Snapchat give us that capability?
Right.
That's a really good question. I've never seen it. I will look for it. Keep your eye on the show notes at techguylabs.com, and I'm watching the chat room. Boy, that's a really good idea. Johnny Jett, our travel expert, coming up next hour. We're going to ask him about the United story and get his take on it and answer more of your questions. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. So I don't like that and the clock. That's too much. And they don't match. It's going to drive the OCD crowd crazy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, time to talk computers. Your worst nightmare. A geek with his own radio show. Actually, we don't talk computers that much. We talk about the internet a little bit. We talk about smartphones, smart watches, self-driving cars, that kind of stuff. Want to mark the passing of a very important guy in the technology industry who died this week at the age of 85, Robert Taylor. You know the name? No, of course you don't. But if it weren't for Robert Taylor, you probably wouldn't be on the internet right now. You wouldn't be using a mouse. You might not be using a GUI. It all started in 1966. Robert Taylor had just taken a job at the Pentagon, director of the Information Processing Techniques Office, which is part of ARPA, the Advanced Research Projects Agency. He gets into the office, and he looks, and at the time, ARPA's funding three different... I'm getting all this, by the way, from the great John Markoff's article about Robert Taylor in the New York Times. But this is legend, right? Well known to people who follow the history of the internet. He got in the office, and there were three different computer systems, none of which could talk to each other. And he said, "This is not a good idea. We need some sort of common language that our different computer systems can use to talk to one another." So he went to the head of ARPA, Charlie Hertzfeld, and said, "Charlie, what do you think?" Charlie said, "That's a good idea." He took $1 million out of the ballistic missile defense budget and put it into the ARPA budget and said, "Figure it out." And they did. They designed the protocols that power the internet. They actually invented the internet back in the 60s. fast forward to the early 70s. He's at the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center in Northern California. He got Xerox to do something called the Alto, which was a computer with windowing and graphics. Never in the early 70s, nobody had heard about that. So they're designing this. Then he goes to NASA. He's about a year into his job at NASA, and he learns about a young guy named Doug Engelbart at the Stanford Research Institute who's trying to figure out a better way to use a computer. Doug has made this big wooden thing he calls a mouse that he uses to steer a pointer on the screen. He said, that's a great idea. So he financed the development of the mouse. All one guy, Bob Taylor, and we owe him quite a bit for making the mouse, the graphics interface, and even the internet commonplace. Passed away this week at the age of 85. He lived in Woodside, California. So, it's sad because these pioneers are forgotten, of course, and that's the way of life, right? That's the way it is. But I just want to give him a little credit because he changed our world. Maybe the internet would have come along. Somebody else would have thought of it. Maybe we would have had a mouse, but maybe not. Maybe not. So now, thanks to the internet, we can tell everybody what we had for lunch and complain about United Airlines and all of that thanks to Robert Taylor. What do you think? What do you think Robert Taylor thought about his invention and how it had come along? Huh? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number to call. You can talk to Heather Hammond and get your question on the air like Bill in Gainesville, Georgia. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastically well, except for one issue.
Uh-oh.
And my son informs me that he needs a new computer, which I understand he's had his laptop for about 6 years.
Oh, and, yeah. How old is your son?
My son is, he just turned 23. He's just finishing up at culinary school. He's a chef.
Oh, that's neat. That's what my son wants to do, too. He's 22.
Tell him to do it. My son is absolutely loving it. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Henry loves to cook. And what a good skill to have, right? You can always get work cooking.
Well, the rare times that he comes home, he cooks, and it's well worth it.
Oh, yeah, you get the benefits. Yeah, same for us. So he has a computer. He feels a need for a new one.
Yeah, but here's the thing I'm not understanding. And he wants to go with, he said, I want to go old school. He wants to go with a desktop. And I know that they're phasing them out. I didn't know if there was anything decent out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because you know where they're used primarily now in business.
Yeah,
and actually, there's some great desktops, some innovative desktops. Microsoft just released a $3,000 desktop called the Surface Studio that looks like an all-in-one, like an iMac. So it's just a screen and a base. Everything's in the base, but you can tilt it forward to a 20-degree angle, like a drafting table. For a designer or an artist, this is incredible, and it's touch and it's beautiful. But now, what does he want to do with his computer?
Mostly writing, and I think he does a little. He's got the latest Xbox, whatever that is.
That's why he wants a PC. He wants to game.
That's what I'm thinking. So I think it's gonna. But you mentioned all in one, and he had mentioned that too. But I've been sort of leery of the all in one. If you have a phone to go bad, the whole thing has to be.
You nailed it. That's the problem. All in one is designed to be aesthetically pleasing, right? Because there's not a lot of wires and boxes on the desk. It looks pretty. But it isn't practical from the point of view of upgrading and from the point of view of repairs. For that, a tower case, just like the old-fashioned tower case that you can open up, you can swap out cards. For a gamer, that's actually exactly what you want. And a big screen and a nice keyboard and gaming mouse and all of that. If it is gaming that he wants, then it's going to be a little more expensive because he's going to want the latest graphics card, probably want an NVIDIA 1080. Is Dad financing this?
No, Dad is not going to be financing this. Dad is almost done with financing.
Yeah, I know. You're right at the edge of the you can. There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Now, this is something he's been looking into.
You just want to help him with some advice, right?
Yeah, he called me.
So for gaming, there are a number of companies that make gaming computers, specifically for gaming. A lot of times they're overpriced because what you're really buying is, fancy lighting and stuff. But they will have the highest end modern graphic cards. For instance, Dell, which makes excellent tower computers And with similar components, if you know, you can go as high-end as you want. But they also bought a company called Alienware that makes, you know, beautiful gaming PCs. So if he's looking at gaming PCs, Alienware is really great. Asus has a line called the ROG, R-O-G, or Republic of Gaming line, that's a little less expensive, but every bit as good. I would look at those. They're quite good. And then there are a lot of smaller companies like CyberPower that specialize, Doghouse, that specialize in gaming PCs. You're going to, a lot of times, just being paying for the fancy case, but sometimes they have features that you'll need, like water cooling, that can make a big difference, because gaming PCs might, you know, get hot. They use a lot of power.
They run that hot.
Yeah. Okay. I think if, you know, once he prices it, he's spending the money, he's going to say, and then you could say, well, Dell makes Alienware, and they make a less spiffy computer with the same capability. Just look at the Dells. They're gray and boring, but they do the same thing.
You don't buy a computer to look at the tower.
Well, yeah, you put it under the desk in most cases. So I think Asus and Dell are excellent. You can, you know, if you want to build your own, he can go to Newegg and he can get a bare bones case and then start adding pieces to it as well. But I'm really liking Dell. The advantage of buying it from one company is that's the company you call if there's a problem. If you build your own, there's 14 different phone numbers you have to call, and they'll all palm it off on the other guy.
So their support's pretty good.
Dell used to be the king of support, and they've gone downhill because, like everybody else, they're trying to get the prices down. But if you want really good support, they still offer it. You just have to buy their gold support plan.
Okay. But
it's very good. I wouldn't buy that unless he needs it down the road. You know, you can buy it after the fact. But, yeah, I would look at Dell. We still, for the business office, buy Dell PCs. They have a 34-inch curved monitor that will knock your socks off. Great for gaming. Love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So what about that now? Now it's showing tweets, and I'll have to get Tanya or whoever does that account to put something new in there. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to Woodland Hills and Autumn. Hi, Autumn.
Hi there. I've got such a list of questions, of which I'll only ask one. You'll be happy to hear.
Okay. Well, hey, if Leo would just shut up and answer, maybe we could get more than one in. I'm just a loudmouth. What can I do for you?
I got one little quickie first. I go on to your website, but I can't figure the way to bring up the subject that I want without reading everything.
So there's a search right at the top there on techguylabs.com. That's probably the best way. We do have, and I don't, you know, it's funny, I don't use my site. I should. They call it dog fooding, where you eat your own dog food. We do have... tags, right? So if you see on the right-hand side, there's popular topics. Now, obviously, you know, if your topic is not a popular topic, you won't, you know, backup and recovery is number one, then there's business. And if you do see all, you'll see a whole bunch of different topics that we've divided. But even if you're looking at an individual, you know, if you want to, what is the subject you want to search?
Well, there's multiple ones because
Let's say smartwatches, okay? Just put it in the search field there, and, I didn't spell it right. I got to spell it right. That's part one. And then it will show you a number of articles, questions and answers with the date, the names of the caller, and all of that. So you can dig down deep into the subject of smartwatches. And then there's one more feature I should mention. I never have done this, but we also tag. So we have topics and we have tags. So, for instance, this call was about, I mentioned the Samsung Gear S3. So there's a tag there. You can click those tags and then find more articles about that topic. So there's topics, there's tags, and there's search, all of which should help you, I hope. And, you know, unless we've designed this terribly, find what you're looking for.
Let me ask this particular question.
Sure.
Excuse me. I have DSL. I don't have Wi-Fi anywhere except for my flip phone.
Okay.
Flip phone.
Yes.
Luddite, admittedly.
No problem. I love our Luddites.
I have had a lot of problems. I've had the phone company out. They changed their line, changed modems many times, on and on. Now what's happening is that anytime I go to YouTube and click on a subject, there's long pauses with circles, you know, and then I'll get maybe 20 seconds of information and then 30 seconds of pausing with a circle going around for
okay.
everything, all the time.
Okay.
I have never clicked on this, you know, see what's pausing because I figure that's something going to rip me off. But
so there's the problem, and the reason these things are hard to diagnose is there's so many things that could cause this. It might not be your internet at all. It might be your computer.
My computer is about 5 years old. It's a Lenovo. And it was a...
Does it seem slow in any other respect?
No. And it has a little tab on the front that you can raise for turbo speed. I've done that, and it doesn't seem to be any faster, but the little light that goes on and off turns to red instead of blue, you know.
I haven't seen a turbo button in a long time. I'm surprised that's even there. Are you sure your computer's only a few years old?
Yeah, I bought it on sale, so maybe that's why it was on sale.
Or the turbo button doesn't do anything. Some cases still have turbo buttons, but there hasn't been... The last time I saw a computer that did turbo was about 20 or 30 years ago.
No, this thing I bought in 2012.
Who made it?
Lenovo.
Okay. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but I just to point out that... That's one of many things that can be the problem. It's not unusual for DSL to have a problem with bandwidth as well. But the problem with DSL is the company that sells you DSL is at the mercy of the phone company. DSL was created by phone companies. It stands for Digital Subscriber Line. And originally, when they first created it, the plan was... they were going to do like compete with cable TV. They were going to put movies down the line. That flopped pretty darn quick. But the technology allowed them to put data down the line. And of course, the internet was coming on strong about that time. That's how long ago this was, mid 90s. So they said, we could use this for internet service. But it uses the same copper line that your phone uses. And that there's a lot of things could be wrong with that. Inside the house, up on the pole, even the connector outside, all could have problems. Sometimes you hear DSL providers talk about interior wiring. And, homeowners often will take the line, they'll split it, they'll cut it, they'll do all sorts of stuff to it. And when it's just a telephone, that works. But it's not so good for data. So, if you get your DSL from your phone company, you can say, can you please check the lines? They should check the wires outside the box at, you know, the junction box and the wires inside. If you're buying your internet service provider, internet service from somebody that's not your phone company, they're still leasing those lines from the phone company and the phone company is still responsible for them. But good luck getting help. In fact, good luck getting help from the phone company because in most cases, the phone company wants to sell you something different like fiber. The other problem with DSL is the speed of DSL declines dramatically as you get farther and farther from the central office. After 2 miles, it barely works at all. And so that's another thing to ask. You'll also find that phone companies sometimes throttle your DSL. They provide slower service. And it sounds to me, if you're getting pauses as you're loading pages, that does sound like your service is slow. I mean, it could be your computer slow, but it does sound like your service is slow. Unfortunately, you're at the mercy of your DSL provider for all of this. So what happens sometimes with browsers is they preload some content, so that came in fast. But then by the time you've used up all the preloaded content halfway down the page, now they've got to go out and it's slow. Here's what I would do. Test your speed. See if you're getting what you're promised. And don't do it with speedtest.net because a lot of the internet service providers not only know about it, but they will see you're using it and they'll go, and speed you up. Use broadbandreports.com. They used to be called DSL Reports, so they actually have lots of information there about DSL. DSLReports.com. Up at the top, there's a button that says speed test. Use their speed test, and that'll give you a better idea of what speeds you have. But remember, the speed can will be the, you know, the kind of the average speed, but watch the graph as it builds, because it could have dips. It could go faster and slower and faster and slower. If that's the case, then that could be a big problem as well. That could be the source of your slowdown. It's inconsistent performance. And that often happens because of poor phone lines, poor copper. Just a lot of things can go wrong with DSL. And often, no one company owns all those problems. Even the phone company, if they say, well, you didn't buy the interior line insurance, interior wiring insurance, so we're not going to go in there, that could be the problem. For that, maybe you have to bring in somebody, a technician, who can look at that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Johnny Jet, too. There's so many things it could be. It could be the computer. It's an old computer. It could have malware on it. There's just so many things it could be. There's no way of knowing. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, our travel guru. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
He joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. And in fact, is probably one of the hot people this week after the United fiasco. There's some technology there. We learned about it before anybody did from passengers on that Chicago to Louisville plane who shot video of one of their passengers being dragged off against his will. Now, Johnny, there was a lot of misinformation when this happened. And one thing, and I'm sure you'll say this, is that in every case, the pilot and the airline have the right to kick people off the plane for whatever reason, right?
Correct. Unfortunately, that is the rule.
So it's not unfortunate. That has to be the rule. I understand why that's the rule. He's the captain of the ship.
Yeah.
But I understand that. I mean, what you can ding United for, and I do ding them for, is a couple of things. First of all, and I understand they're going to change this, they shouldn't let passengers board and then decide to bump them. If you're going to bump somebody, bump them before they get on and get comfortable. And I have been bumped. I told you I was bumped. I can't remember which airline did it. But they came to me. We had standby seats, so I understand I wasn't a full-fledged passenger. And I wasn't an executive or anything like that. I wasn't on 1K. But they came to me and Lisa, and they said, well, the plane is overweight, so you'll need to get off. Now, because I was standby, I felt like, well, all right. So I didn't fight it. I got off. And right. Then two people who of equal size got on. And then I realized, that they lied to me because they had somebody who was a higher category or something. Or maybe, as in this case, they had to move airline personnel.
Well, I've heard a couple different things. One, I heard that actually the four flight attendants were actually on vacation, and they were trying to get back to Chicago.
See, that's not okay.
And I don't know if that's true, but supposedly they were friends with the gate agents. And again, people keep forgetting this wasn't United Airlines. This was actually Republic Airways.
Yeah, but it's a United Express franchise. It was United Regional Flight.
Right, but they also fly for other airlines, Republic. It's not just United.
Yeah, I understand. And so it's a question of, but the gate agents are from United.
Oh, for sure. And you know what? The problem is that, again, they should have handled it a lot differently. Obviously,
that's my only complaint. That's my only complaint, is that this is bad customer relations on United's part. And certainly injuring a passenger seems like a bad idea. Now, apparently Dr. Dow, he refused to get off. That's a problem, right? You can't refuse to get off if you're being told you have to get off the flight. You have to get off the flight. United has the right to do that. Just as if you come into my place of business and I ask you to leave, you have to leave. And if somebody refuses to leave and is disruptive, I might have to call the cops too. One would hope that the person doesn't lose two front teeth, get his nose broken and concussed in the process. We learn now also they happen to have lost his luggage. But he wasn't, acting
disruptive.
He was disruptive.
He wasn't disruptive at all. So I mean,
he was disruptive because he wasn't getting off.
Well, they should have gone to someone else. So United says it was random the way they choose people, but the way not to get involuntarily bumped is a few different ways. First, you definitely want to check in online 24 hours in advance, and you want to get a seat assignment. So make sure, because once you have a seat assignment, you have a you're much better chance of not getting booted. Actually, my sister got booted once because she did not check in. She checked in when she got to the airport, and her family were going to Barbados for Christmas, and the flight was oversold, and she called me up crying. I was like, well, you know what? Don't be crying. Don't cry, because you know what? You can get some money out of this. Just tell the gate agent you want $1,350.
Yeah.
And she told the gate agent, and the gate agent's like, okay, just kind of be quiet, don't say anything, just stay to the side, and I'll write you guys checks. She didn't want everyone else to know, because I guess they bumped a lot of people that day.
Well, and by the way, United could have offered Dr. Dow or somebody more money. They stopped at twice the ticket face value, and had they offered more, I'm sure eventually, as they went up, you know, to pay somebody a couple of $1,000s to get off the flight is a lot better than losing $770 million in stock value.
Well, everyone has a price, and that is where they messed up. You know, they should have just kept going up. They went to 400, then to 800. Supposedly they went to 1,000, although that's not confirmed. But, you know, if they went up to...
There's so much misinformation on this, too. There's so much we don't know. So,
But Delta is brilliant, by the way, because Delta came out yesterday. You know, they sent an internal memo to all their agents, because before, their gate agents were only allowed to go up to $800, which, you know, is the case probably with United, because United usually copies everything Delta does. But supervisors are allowed to go up to $2,000. So now Delta's saying gate agents can go up to $2,000, and the supervisors can go up to almost $10,000, $99.50, which is incredible. I don't think anyone's ever going to see that kind of money, but just the point that they allow it to the supervisors is a great PR move.
It's ideal to get somebody to voluntarily give up their seat. And if they needed four seats on a plane, there had to be a point at which they would say, okay, hey, I'll do it for $1,500 or I'll do it for $2,000. There had to be a number. Hey, and as United is realizing, if you look back at it, this is a much, much better way to get these people off.
Listen, I know tons of people who try to get bumped on purpose to make extra travel money, and I've done it.
I got nothing, by the way, for being times. I got nothing for being bumped because the plane was overweight.
You should send an email. Actually, I just sent an email to American yesterday for canceling my flight, and they just sent me 15,000 miles.
Yeah, I was a little insulted that they thought I was so fat that they had to get me off the flight. I'm not that fat.
Well, if you want to get bumped and make some extra money, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, you book flights during busy peak periods, and you can look at flight loads, you can look at the, you know, go online, look at the seating charts, or you could even call the airline, find out what the loads are.
And really, is there any reason why an airline should be bumping people who are already seated?
No.
They really should figure that out before you board the plane.
Unless the plane's too heavy or, you know, safety reasons. So, yeah.
Well, wait a minute.
Maybe four.
So this is, by the way, what went through my mind. Are you telling me the plane is sitting on a scale right now and you know if you get my 220 pounds off, everything will be okay?
On regional carriers, yeah. They know. I've been asked to move to the left side of the plane.
I've been asked to do that. I don't mind doing that. But how do they know what the weight of the plane is after the passengers get on? Do they have a scale?
I assume so, but you're going to have to ask.
They don't have a skit. Give me a break.
Hey.
What, do they pull up to the truck stop and weigh themselves? They don't know. They don't know how much I weigh, and they don't know how much the people who got on weighed.
I don't know about that. You got to ask a pilot. But
I have to recognize the pilot is God on that plane. And really, as a passenger, you should want that, unless the pilot's nuts. You should want that because the pilot is ultimately responsible for your safety.
Right.
And he needs to be able to say things like, get off the plane.
Yeah. But if you want to get bumped, you know, you can make money. And, you know, over 500,000 people were bumped in 2016, and most of them walked away. They were happy.
Yeah.
You know what? You can get extra money. And, you know what? So if you want to volunteer, go to the agent right when you check in and tell them that you're willing to be bumped. Then go to the gate and tell them again and stay by the gate. Don't go too far. So right when they announce it, they need people. You're the first in line, and then you can always negotiate and try and get, you know, make sure you get on the next flight or whenever you want to, and try and get in first class, try and get meal vouchers or lounge access. And you got to be nice. Don't be a jerk, because, you know, then nothing's going to come out of it.
So it turns out, thanks to the chat room, the 707, the 747, and the L-1011, when used as freight flights, have weights in the scale, in the wheels. have scales in the wheels. They can tell the weight. But that's because freight flights can be quite heavy, typically not used on passenger flights.
Okay. I would think the reason, because the regional carriers,
they have to rearrange, and that's Johnny Jett. He's at johnnyjett.com. He's got a lot of articles about this, including details about Delta's new compensation plan. Go there, follow him on Twitter, where this conversation continues. And we'll see you next week. Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. So it's interesting that even you don't know everything that happened, that there's a lot of questions, right?
Yeah, for sure. Without a doubt. I think only the people who really know what happened are the gate agents.
We don't know if the pilot got involved, for instance.
I would assume he did.
I would think that what happened
I think he did.
This guy was disruptive when he was asked to leave, and that's when they called the cops. The cops didn't handle it well.
No, he just refused to get off. He wasn't disruptive. He just said, I'm not getting off.
Oh, okay.
I need to go to work.
So what do they do then? Do they choose somebody else, or they say, no, you have to get off?
Well, that's when they should have said, we'll give you more money, or they should have got on the PA and said, you know what, we're going to raise the compensation.
Yeah.
You know,
you negotiate. You negotiate. You don't go to war. You negotiate.
Yeah. And one important fact that I forgot to mention just now about how to get bumped is make sure you let people know that don't check your bags. You know, if you're just doing carry-on, it's a lot easier to get bumped because you can be much more flexible
right.
on flights and things like that. Because if you check the bag, they're going to be like, you know what? Your bag's already on. We're not going to take the time to take it off.
So that's interesting. The case where we got kicked off, we had carry-on. We didn't have checked luggage, so it was easy. And we were flying standby. That's the main reason I went without a peep. It's like, oh, they didn't mean to let us on in the first place.
Right. And were you standby as a guest an employee?
No. We got to the airport early and we said, oh, we could really leave earlier.
Gotcha.
So we went to the desk and we said, and then she said, well, I don't, that's a pretty full flight. I doubt I can get you on. And then all of a sudden they said, oh, we got you on.
Gotcha.
So we got on it. We had another flight that we already were ticketed for that was going to leave, you know, a few hours later. So it wasn't, I mean, I just got off. I didn't even think twice about it. When they ask you to get off, I got off.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, when I saw people getting on, I thought, that wasn't because I was too heavy or we were too heavy. That was just there. But you know what? That's how you get people off. You tell them little white lies or whatever. You don't escalate.
Yeah.
Hey, Dr. Dow, your mom is at the desk. She wants to talk to you.
Oh my
God. He gets off and then you leave real quick. Apparently, I saw stories that the deputies that got him off lost track of him and he ran back on the plane.
Yeah, he I saw the video of him back on the plane.
It's such a strange story, but I can tell you, I'm never flying United again. I'm sorry, I'm just not going to fly.
I disagree. I think.
Well, I have lots of other reasons for hating United. I mean, this is the last straw.
Listen, I used to love United, then I hated United, but.
I was a United free. I still have a United frequent flyer credit card, and I was a United frequent flyer, and I flew United whenever I could. Then they merged with Continental and went to hell in a hell and
right
and fell apart. And I can live without United. Happy to. And yes, I think we need to send a message to companies that do crap like that.
Problem is, there's not a lot of competition, so that's what happens.
Well, there is though. I can go Southwest.
Southwest doesn't fly everywhere United flies. Not even close.
Are there? Well, if I ever have to go that's going to be interesting. If I ever go somewhere where I can only fly United, I have not run into that yet. But
well, you will, unfortunately.
Really?
Yep. Especially out of San Francisco.
Yeah.
If you want to go skiing, things like that.
So far, I've not run into that, and I do have airlines I like Virgin America and JetBlue and. And I've been very happy with, so.
Well, at least nonstop. I mean, you can make a stop on other carriers, but if you want to go nonstop, sometimes you might have to fly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Johnny, you're as I knew you would be, the seat of reason. Thank you, Johnny.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have never heard this version of this song. It's good. Michael Cosio is our musical director and is finding some interesting songs. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Dean San Diego. Sure. You're next. Hi, Dean.
Hey, how you doing, Leo? Thanks for taking the call.
Oh, I get it now. That song was Bad Company. he was dedicating that to United. There's always a little editorial going on in our bumper music. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Dean, what can I do for you?
Well, I, for years, have used a Nook HD Plus for downloading books from my library using OverDrive.
Oh, interesting. So you're not buying Barnes & Noble books. You have your own books that you've converted into the Nook format.
No, I they are free books from the San Diego City or County Library.
Got it.
So I rarely get any books from Barnes & Noble. But our city library is changing to a new program, a new reader program called Cloud Reader.
Okay.
Cloud Reader is not compatible with Nook. And Barnes & Noble, which made a big splash in the reader Nook category years ago, has changed their mind about six times
as
whether they're going to
let me guess
or not.
I'm going to guess Cloud Reader is Kindle compatible.
Is Cloud? I don't know.
Yeah, it is. And that, so what you're seeing is because the Nook was a failure, and Barnes & Noble has pretty much given up on the Nook.
Correct, and they no longer support it.
Yeah. The library is sad because it's leaving you out in the cold, but the library is going to a platform that's more, you know, being supported.
I want to change to an iPad.
Good, because Kindle's on iPad. This is one reason it's smart to go with Kindle, because it's on everything, right?
Right.
And an iPad has Kindle software, so Cloud Reader worked just fine.
Okay, but I don't know what iPad to get.
Well, I could tell you right now is a good time to buy an iPad because Apple has decided to jumpstart iPad sales by announcing a new iPad that's low cost. It starts at $329.
And what is that actually called, Leo? Because that's when I try to research, I see.
Yeah, well, they didn't help you because you know what? And the name of the $329 iPad?
Well,
it's called the iPad. It has no number. It has no designation. It has no name. Set iPad. There's an iPad Pro. There's an iPad Mini. It's the one that's neither the Pro nor the Mini. It's just the iPad.
Okay.
Now, $329 is a 9.7-inch, which means it says it's the same size as a regular iPad. There's a few things they gave up on this. It doesn't have a laminated screen, which makes a little bit of a difference in sunlight with reflectivity, but it's not a big deal.
Okay.
It is a Retina display. It is as fast as kind of the middle of the road iPads. It's an A9 chip, not an A10, so it's not pro speed. And best of all, Apple supports it with the latest version of iOS. It has a fingerprint reader, which I think is a really great feature. At that price, Apple's being very aggressive. They're basically saying, we want to own. They did this with the iPod, too. Once the iPod had really saturated the market and they owned it at the high end, they started going after the low end. And at $329, I can't see a reason to buy anything but the new iPad.
Do you know what the storage is on that? Or
I'm going to guess it's 32 gigs, which is, for book reading, it's fine. Let me look real quickly. 32 gigs is the $329 version.
Okay.
If you wanted more storage, you can get 64 and probably even 128.
Yeah, I don't necessarily need...
Books aren't big.
But I do. I would use it as a... adjunct to my MacBook Pro laptop.
Perfect.
When my wife is using the laptop.
I think, you know, iPad sales had been somewhat stalled, so Apple has kicked it into gear, and this is a great price, I have to say. I guess they don't offer a 64 gig. They go straight to, for $100 more, 128 gigs. Now, remember, it's not the books themselves and the Kindle software is going to not take much space at all. So that's more than was on your Nook. Your Nook probably only was a couple of gigabytes.
Right, but I didn't use the Nook much as a...
So you think you're going to use the iPad for other things? Is you're going to put apps on it and so forth?
I would use it for email and various other things like that.
I think 32 is fine.
Yeah.
The reason they make 128 is there are lots of people that store TV and movies and music on it. And if you're not going to do that, 32 is okay.
Yeah. All Okay, so that is the new one that's out, and it's
called the iPad.
It's very confusing.
I know. Curse you, Apple. I don't understand. I think they're. Oh, this is Apple. This is so Apple, right? They don't really. They don't care. They don't have to.
Hey, have you got another minute?
Yeah.
About idiots on my or widgets.
Idiots.
iPhone.
That's a good name for them. Idiots. There's idiots.
What are these widgets for? I can't figure them out.
Yeah. So this was Apple looking at one of the features of Android that made it very popular, which on an iPhone, you only have icons on the screen, right? It's just icons, and they don't tell you much. The most an icon could tell you is how many unread emails with that little red dot.
Right.
On an Android phone, you can put, you know, a little widget, a box that has some most recent emails in it or what music's playing. You can customize the screen a little bit more. Apple didn't want to do that, so instead they added widgets to the notifications drop down. You know, when you slide down, you get notifications in your iPhone. If you slide the notifications to the right, you'll see the widgets. And it starts with the day and date, but it can have other things on there as well. It's up to you what widgets you have. Not all applications support widgets, but if you go to the very bottom of the widget screen, so again, swipe down to get notifications, swipe right to get widgets, you'll see an edit box.
I see that.
And the edit box lets you add widgets, and so you can, or subtract them, and even reorder them. So you can decide which widgets you want to see. If you're about to travel, for instance, and you're about to fly on United, there's a United widget, you could drag that on there, and then when you slid down, you'd be able to see your flight information immediately rather than opening up the United app. That's the main idea of this is, instead of opening an application, let's have some display that shows the information you typically want.
Okay, so the widgets are only show up then on the
notification screen. Yep. The swipe down screen.
If I have my stockbroker as an app, I could add that as a widget.
Yeah. Let's say you frequent
the notification screen, and I still have to open the app, right?
No. So that's let's say you and you can do this with a stock app. You say, well, I want to keep track of four stocks. You put those four stocks in. And then if you want to see them quickly, you swipe down and you put that stock app right at the top, and you can see immediately what your stock prices are. Without opening the app, the widget is separate. If you want to know more, you tap the widget, it opens the app.
Oh, okay.
So that's the whole point of a widget, is to get basic information without opening the app.
I gotcha. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you very much, Leo. Love to listen to you down here in San Diego.
Beautiful. I'm glad you listen on KOGO down there. That's great.
Thank you.
Down there. One of my favorite towns. I love San Diego. A lot of fun to visit. I like frankly, one of the reasons I really love Android phones is I can customize the screen to have that stock information right on the screen. So, the iPhone, it feels a little bit dated because you can only see a grid of icons on the iPhone front screen. I can see all sorts of stuff, what music I'm listening to, what book I'm reading, what my stock prices are, what the news headlines are. And I completely control that by placing widgets on the screen. Or as he calls them, as Dean calls them, idgets. I got idgets. You idgets. I think that's good. I like it. I think widgets are a good feature. You know, it's really, the iPhone is in the United States anyway, the most popular smartphone out there. And for most, it makes sense because most people they don't want to spend a lot of time messing with their phone layout and their setup and tweaking it and refining it and modifying it. They just want it to work. And Apple's philosophy is, we're going to set it up the way we think it should be set up, the way that most people will want. And that's that. In most cases, you can't change it. It's just, that's that. It's Apple's way or the highway. And the truth is, for people who don't want to mess with stuff, which is most people, as long as you're happy with that, that's great. You only get problems, and from time to time you do, when people say, okay, I love everything except I want to change this one thing. I want to make my iPhone use a different camera, for instance, like one of our earlier callers. Then, unfortunately, I have to say, well, Apple doesn't let you do that. Apple's way or the highway. But I think most people are very content with that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Geeks, this is for you. If you're buying a house or refiing a house, you know that the process, unless you're loaded and you just write a check, the process involves getting a home loan, right? And if you've ever gotten a home loan, I think back to the when we Lisa and I bought our house about 3.5 years ago. We went to the lender. You got to go. You got to meet the lender. You got to shake his hand. He looks up. He had a clipboard, you know, with all these really thin pieces of sheets of paper, and which were updated every day. It looked like a phone book with all the rates on it. He'd go through it, and then he says, "Okay, but you need to bring in your paperwork. I need your bank statements and your pay stubs." So we brought those in. Then about a week later, the bank came back. Well, you need this, that, and that. Long story short, a month later, we're on vacation. We're still faxing in paperwork. This is before Rocket Mortgage. Now I would use Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage, completely online. You don't have to go to a loan office, meet a loan officer. It's you can even submit all the paperwork they need with a touch of a finger electronically right there on the phone or the tablet or the computer. And it's because it's computerized, everything's fast and easy. Like you can select your rate, you can select your term, all that. And within minutes, they'll turn you around for a loan that's exactly right for your financial situation. Not days, weeks, months, years, minutes. Oh, and Rocket Mortgage, I should tell you, comes to you from Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. They're awesome. If you go to quickenloans.com/techguy, you can see all their J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards. Year after year, number one in loan origination, number one also in loan servicing. Quickenloans.com/techguy for Rocket Mortgage, the completely online mortgage approval process. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Next time you're going to buy or refi, I want you to do that. And I know we will. Quickenloans.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, well, you can still call us. Just use Skype. It's okay. Website, techguylabs.com. Let's go to Bob in Vista, California, our next caller. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
Not bad. Got a question for you. I'm not
yes, sir.
A computer guy per se. I got called in by my local church to do some work for their audio. They have a half a dozen RF battery pack microphones that go to a receiver. They had nothing but noise and disaster going on. I spent about 4 hours cleaning it up, figuring out that there was absolutely nothing wrong with all the transmitters and receivers. And to get a long story short, this computer somebody sat on the desk next to the sound
card. Oh, no.
Is an HP.
That's so funny. It was making the noise?
Well, yeah. I mean,
So you moved it away and everything works fine?
I couldn't move it away, and you couldn't get it away far enough. So I went a little bit more laborious.
You wrapped it in tin foil.
I was close. I did get the little beads, the ferrites, the
right.
This. I mean, I was, praying to the, So, anyway.
That's terrible. Computers should not make so much noise that it interferes like that. That's terrible.
Desktop HP with a horizontal desktop with a monitor on it.
Yep.
Right next to the board. Yep. And I finally figured out.
Probably the monitor is worse than the computer, but I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I kind of chased the dog on that. I changed the cable. Okay, I'll go for quality. Change the cables, this, that. Put my own little monitor in there. It's going from a display port to DVI. And so I put my own monitor in there. Sure enough, this is noisy as hell.
Okay.
And I just can't figure it out. So I finally get all my audio working straight. They call me back this week and drop an HP laptop, an old one on there that has HDMI. So I go down to a local store and get the HDMI to RGB, the old VGA, and they need that to get onto the displays, the projection screens. And there's no noise whatsoever. It works perfect.
Nice.
But
After all the research, it all come back to audio blogs where somebody had already done this in their studio and ruined everything in their studio as far as...
It's very common. We have the problem. We have the same problem with my mic cable. If a power brick gets too near, so it goes under the desk, and if a power brick gets too near to it, I'll call the engineers saying, I'm hearing hum, and they go under the desk, and then all they do is they move a power brick, you know, one of those transformer for a laptop, sure. They move it away. It's very, very common. You'd think computers would be better made, but as long as they pass FCCB approval, which means they don't cause too much interference, they're sold. Even wrapping it with foil can help. The chokes are great, the little ferrite bead chokes that you put on cables.
Yeah, I gave that a shot.
But the problem is where is it coming from, right?
Well, it kind of went in a dog's tail and never got the answer. I mean, is it the...
It's probably not the cabling. The chokes would help if it's the cabling. But, you know, a monitor has a big fly transformer in there that's putting out a lot of RF. Sometimes the processors, you know, our processors and our computers now are at the 3 and 4 gigahertz range. They're right in the transmitting range. So, in fact, we were very concerned in the early days of high-speed processors that this exact thing would happen. Well-shielded cases will prevent this. And, of course, it's very, distance-dependent. So if you can move it, that almost always fixes it. But it sounds like you can't move it, right?
Well, usually when you're dealing with volunteerism, it's usually somebody running that.
You know, can't move my computer. Can you move the transmitters?
He's running his computer, and he's also probably running the mics on the audio.
Yeah, he needs it there, yeah.
But
the August Apple had this problem very recently. They started selling a 5K display for Apple computers that was made by... I can't remember who it was made by, but it wasn't made by Apple. And all of a sudden, people said, you know, this monitor is killing my internet access. What? How could a monitor kill internet access? Well, it turns out the monitor wasn't properly shielded. And if your router, your internet router modem was too close to the, it was LG, too close to the LG monitor, the radio frequency would kill your internet. So LG took the monitors back and they put better shielding internally and it's fine now. But if this can happen to Apple and LG, it can happen anywhere. You might consider wrapping the inside of the case with foil.
It was a big weekend for the church, so we got around it by just shutting that computer off and I left the laptop on there.
Metal will stop it. So if you could put a panel around it, put a piece of metal in, put a pot in between the back of the
cooking tin.
Yeah, just like something metal in between it and the so the you know, you got to either get the transmitter away from the computer. The back of the computer is worse than the front in many cases. The monitors, almost all the RF on monitors comes out the back because that's where the transformer is. So
right up against those four receivers.
Is it a CRT or an LCD monitor?
This is all fairly new stuff. It's LCD.
Okay, because the old CRTs were worse. Actually, they don't have transformers. I don't think the LCDs have transformers anymore. I think they have ballasts because they're often fluorescent backlit. So, an LED backlit monitor might do a better job, you know? I mean, it's all voodoo trial and error. It really was. Yeah, that's always the case.
It's like only going backwards and getting away from the digital signal and back to an analog signal. Everything cleaned up. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of RF on this.
We can't see it. And it doesn't hurt us, by the way, unless it's really powerful. You're not encouraged to climb radio towers without special protection. But the computer's not putting off that much. So, yeah, a little copper mesh. That's copper mesh is really good for this stuff. A little copper mesh. They even make fabric. I use it because recently we learned hackers can steal your car by amplifying the signal from your fob. So if you have one of those keyless entry cars where you just walk up to it and the door is unlocked and you get in, well, the reason is that there's a radio in the car and a radio in the key fob. When you get close enough, the radio in the car says, I see the key fob, and unlocks the doors. Well, it turns out for about $20, you can go on eBay and buy a amplifier that will pick up the weak signal from your key fob. Let's say you're inside your house or you're in your office. The hacker goes up to your car, turns on this transmitter, picks up the signal from your key fob, amplifies it sufficiently so your car thinks the key fob is next to the car, and then they get in and drive off. So when we learned this, it was the advice of our security guy, Steve Gibson, that you get something to protect that. And it's an RF protection bag. It's a little bag. It's fabric, but the fabric has metal threads in it. And they're sufficient to block the signal from your key fob. So when you get to work, I don't do this anymore, but when you get, I should probably do it. I can see my car out the window. I'm close enough to probably work. When you get to work, you put your fob in this bag. So you can get fabric made out of this metal mesh, and that would also work. Drape it over the computer. It might look really nice, too. It's kind of interesting problem, isn't it? Somebody's saying get FCC Class A. That's rated for residential use and has a higher standard than the Class B FCC rating. I did not know that. Most of the electronics we see is Class B rated, I think. 8888 Ask Leo. This is why this show is fun. You learn all sorts of things. Website techguylabs.com will have all the details. More of your calls right after this.
I don't like my clock.
Yeah, Class B is residential. Class C is industrial. I don't know. I got it wrong. That's what I get for listening to the chat room. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. It's too hot. Too hot, baby. Got to run for shelter. Got to run for shade. Pete in San Antonio, Texas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. This is Pete. As you said, a long-time listener since the ZDT days.
Wow. Since 1998. That was almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah, that's when I got my first computer.
Wow.
First real computer, that is. Reason why, before I begin, I love that little clock that you had, the little scrolling one.
No one else liked it. Oh, man.
I want one so bad now.
It yeah.
My eyes pop out when I saw it.
It's a little pricey. It's like $150, La Metric. But I thought this would be the new thing for our video stream, and everybody in the chat room who had an opinion said get rid of it. So,
well, I was all for it in the chat room.
Oh, thank you. What's your chat handle?
It's Frosty Moon.
Hi, Frosty Moon. What can I do for you?
I have kind of an odd question. Heather described it best. She pretty much described it as AT&T is dangling a carrot in front of me to get me to switch my old grandfathered unlimited AT&T
right.
data plan.
Right. They're all doing that now because unlimited plans don't make them enough money. What a shock.
They raise the money, though. They raise the monthly bill, like $30.
Right. They're really pushing you into it. In fact, the CEO of AT&T a couple of years ago said, the worst thing I ever did was offer an unlimited data plan for iPhone users. It started with the original iPhone, and what they didn't understand is how much data a computer phone would use, because nobody really had a smartphone like that yet.
Yes.
So what they're telling you, and it's not untrue, is, well, look how much data you use. You don't really use the unlimited plan. You only use 3 or 4 or 5 gigabytes a month, and if you just buy that much, it would save you so much money.
Well, we're using about 60 gigs a month.
Yeah, see, they don't tell you then that you're going to save money because they don't want you on their plan. 60, right. 60?
Yes. Yeah, that's minimum. That's like the lower portion.
So you're using it. In fact, I bet you if you look at your terms of service, this is not approved. You're using it, sounds like, as your home internet.
No, that's out and about. Yeah. My family and I, we have the DirecTV Go. Or DirecTV Now.
Oh, so you watch a lot of TV. Oh, and it's 60 shared, but how many phones?
3 iPhones and okay. 1 feature phone. I'm paying about $240 a month.
That's not outrageous because each phone's using about 60 gigs, and you are one quarter of that, 15 gigs, and you are watching a lot of video. Video really uses up a lot of bandwidth.
Yes, indeed. But they have these new unlimited data plans, and, I mean, it sounds tempting because they're less expensive than my current
You mean on other carriers?
No, with AT&T.
Oh.
Yeah, they
brought it back, huh?
two different ones, like a one with like super slow unlimited and then the premium unlimited.
You don't want super slow. You wouldn't be able to watch your TV.
Indeed, yes. I'm still getting these messages about getting throttled after 22 gigs of data usage.
Yeah, so they lie about unlimited. In fact, they got everybody did, and they got in trouble with the... Well, in the old days, anyway, you could get in trouble for that with the FTC. They said that it's unlimited, but then they throttle you at a certain point. And government fined them saying, you know, that's not really unlimited. When you say unlimited, people assume you mean unlimited at the same speed. I mean, it is technically unlimited, right? They're not limiting the amount of data. They're only limiting the speed with which you can get it.
Right.
All of the unlimited plans still have, and they're very clear about it now, a limit beyond which you should not go or it'll get slowed down. T-Mobile's 28 gigs. I can't remember what AT&T's is. I think it's 22. What did you say, 20 or 22 gigs?
22.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds, yeah. So, but that's normal, except that you're really an unusual user. Most, you're in the top one-tenth of 1% of users.
Right. Now, I also have an unlimited 3G iPad that I don't even know how much.
Yeah, people are keeping their iPads and their phones because they don't want to get they're grandfathered in on these old plans, right?
Right. Yeah. So I guess I'm better off sticking with my.
Well, it's just it requires almost the use of a spreadsheet because they make it so darn complicated. You know, what's the max speed? What do you get? One of the things AT&T is starting to do is something called zero rating. T-Mobile's the king of zero rating. They call it their binge on plans. Zero rating means they don't count certain things against your total bandwidth. For instance, HBO is included in the AT&T unlimited plan. So
it DirecTV.
Yeah. DirecTV, yeah. So that's the thing. Zero rating will make a difference. Zero rating, by the way, is bad for everybody. Even though individuals love it, it's a form of breaking net neutrality because in effect the companies are telling you, watch this stuff because it's not going to cost you anything in terms of bandwidth. Don't watch this stuff because it's going to cost. The companies are putting themselves in the position of choosing winners and losers on the internet, and that's exactly what we don't want to have happen. Unfortunately, consumers love it. So it's really kind of a sneaky way to break net neutrality, you know. And the new FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, is absolutely dead set against government regulation of any kind. So this zero rating is going to go on and it's going to get worse. In a way, that's good for you, though. You want to look at see if they'll offer, you know, some things without charging against your bandwidth. And if they can offer that one, you know, what is it, DirecTV you're watching on your phone? If they can get rid of that.
Right.
If they can zero rate that one thing, then you're going to be happy because your bandwidth will go from 60 gigabits down to 20.
Mm-hmm. They have two different tiers that they actually, when I check my data usage, it shows the DirecTV usage by itself and then the other data usage.
Ah, so they're not zero rating it, but they are reducing the amount of bandwidth used.
I'm not sure yet. Yeah. Unfortunately, I get great data speeds at my house. I get 90 kbps, yeah, at my house. But, of course, you know, I have my own home network that I can get faster speeds than that. But where it counts is where my wife works, she gets 0.50 kbps, not even a meg.
That's terrible. That's unusable. And yeah. You certainly can't watch TV with that.
Right. And according to AT&T, that's functioning at properly. And the other day she had to call 911. The 911 operator in where she works at couldn't understand what she was saying because the reception's so poor. And I've been fighting it for 5 years already, and they will not fix that area. It's a total dead zone. And pretty much they told me, well, just go to another carrier.
This is why we hate cell phone companies almost as much as cable companies.
Yeah.
These people act like a monopoly. They don't care, and they don't give us very good service, and they're constantly thinking of ways to rip us off. They've made this so complicated, nobody can figure out what they're paying or what they're getting. And you can't really, and really their whole goal is to keep you from comparing plans. So the plans are so weird and different with so many different little clauses that you can't, it's hard to compare, and that's why it's very difficult to figure out what's the best deal. T-Mobile was, you know, we really owe T-Mobile a lot because as the number four carrier, they really put the screws to the other guys and frankly helped us a lot. But even they're getting bigger and less responsive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What's going on, huh? 8888 Ask Leo. Tom is next, Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good.
What can I do for
you? Question on a security cam.
Yeah.
I read your show notes, and there's a couple of recommended models, but what about as far as security? I have a standard AT&T Universe installation with a...
Yeah, they offer security, right? Do they not?
Well, like I say, it's a standard voice over IP router, wireless,
yeah,
Wi-Fi, and then four ports for your
Right. So you're wondering about does that work for a phone? I'm not sure what your question is.
No, I want to add a camera, like a security camera.
Yeah.
Network.
Yeah.
You
mean how much bandwidth is it going to take?
No, security.
Yeah.
Safety.
Yeah. It takes bandwidth if it's a Wi-Fi camera. You want to use a Wi-Fi camera?
I'm open to either Wi-Fi or wired.
So what are you asking for? A recommendation?
Recommendation on what I need to look for as far as protection so no one can hack into the...
Ah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, there's a lot of concern these days. These are called Internet of Things devices. We're putting things on the Internet, cameras, doorbells, lights. And
right. There's
a lot of concern about this because... For a couple of reasons. One, the more minor reason, maybe somebody could hack into it and modify it. If you had a thermostat on the internet, and they could turn the heat way, way up or turn it off all the way in the winter. And then the second concern, which is even maybe more of a concern, is they could be a gateway into your home network and hackers could use that to get in and look at your stuff.
Yeah, that's what I want to put.
Yeah, that's especially the case with cameras. You don't want people watching you.
No.
So my recommendation, they're a little pricey. I'm sure there are many good cameras that are secure. I know for a fact there are many that are not. A company called Foscam made some cameras that were so hackable. There was actually a database of hackable Foscam cameras you could just log into and look at and see what was going on. There were websites made of it. Now, I'm sure they've patched it since then, but in general, the cheaper cameras are less well supported because those companies don't care. They sold them. They're done. They're often offshore companies, so they're not, you know, responsible to the FTC in the U.S. So you really don't want to get the low-end off-brand stuff. You know, made in China.
Right. I'm trying to figure out who's the reputable dealer.
I'll tell you who's definitely reputable. I know for a fact to be very secure is the stuff sold by Google's Nest division, and that's particularly the Nest Cam.
Mm-hmm.
Known and widely agreed by all the security experts I've ever talked to be very reliable, both secure as written and easily updatable. This is another thing you're looking for is, you know, a lot of these bad... cameras can't be fixed. They don't update their firmware, and you can't update it. So it's for the case of the Foscam, for instance, it had a hardwired password that you couldn't change, so anybody could log into your camera. I mean, that's just dopey. That's been fixed, but still, that was a dopey thing to do. You were looking for a camera or a IoT devices that can be updated by the manufacturer and are frequently updated, and that's the Nest stuff for sure. It's Nest is owned by Google. They're going to be very careful to make sure it's secure. So I can, without hesitation, recommend the Nest cams. A little pricey. We use them. We actually use them as security cameras. So we don't broadcast them on the internet. We record onto a Synology network-attached storage hard drive everything that goes on in the studio, and we can access that hard drive from the internet. So the security for those cameras is provided by the DVR that's recording. That's a kind of more sophisticated business style security, but it works very well. Netgear, D-Link, these are big enough names that they're probably secure. But as I said, the only one that I could recommend with absolute confidence is Nest Cam. You know, I mentioned Netgear, but Netgear had a bunch of routers that had terrible security flaws in them. Right. You know, Netgear's a big name, so is D-Link, but they've had problems in the past with security. Nest has never, there have been some little minor things, but the thing is they get fixed right away. So that's the key.
And those are the ones I can just buy at Home Depot, right?
Yep. They're really good. They're a little pricey, but the quality is excellent. And you just kind of, if what you're worried about is security, I think that's the way to go.
Okay. Thanks for the help.
My pleasure. And I know somebody's going to say,
oh, yeah, but then Google can see you.
I don't think so. But people, it's funny. Who do you trust? Who do you trust? I guess what I would say in general is trust a company that has a reputation to protect in the United States, that is a known brand name. They're more likely to respond if there are security flaws. And security flaws happen. Nobody is free of all security flaws. Nest isn't, absolutely. And, yeah, so Scooter X is saying, well, actually, Leo, it's Alphabet that owns Nest, not Google. Alphabet owns Google. I know. That's a finesse. It's all Alphabet. Satbeer in Victorville, California. Am I saying that right, Satbeer?
That's right. That's correct.
Hi, Satbeer. Welcome.
Okay, I've been listening to your show for over 10 years, I guess.
You have my deepest sympathy.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, now, what I have a big problem now, and I do need your help for that. What it is, I have some old programs, accounting programs. I do accounting from home and for people.
Uh-huh.
And, what it is, I've been using DAC Easy.
Oh, yeah, I remember them.
Right. So, and I like that program for one reason, because their payroll system is, I could update their tables and all that stuff.
Yeah.
The only problem is that, you know, that program works on XP system.
They haven't updated it?
They have, but, you know, I didn't want to get the updated one, because, you know, then you cannot update the tables there, you know, yourself. And they charge about the same.
So you didn't like the new version. But the problem is XP has been for 2 years now unsupported by Microsoft. They dumped
it. I know. That's why I'm coming to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is the problem. If you want to use old stuff. Look, the nice thing is XP and DAC Easy, you know, nothing's going to change. They'll work exactly as they did. My advice is don't put that computer on the internet, and then it doesn't matter.
No, I don't, actually. I have three other computers, you know, which are...
Communicate with your clients on more modern, secure systems.
Right, right.
But
right.
Use the DAC Easy system. Just think of it as a standalone system. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Now, there is a problem, though, you know, which I want you to help me on.
Okay.
What it is, this system is actually a Windows 7 Ultimate system.
Okay.
And on Windows 7 Ultimate, I use the XP mode. And then I use DAC Easy.
Okay. So that's actually even better, because now you're secure.
Okay. All right. That's good. So now the problem comes, you know, like just a few days ago, two, three days ago, I'm like every time I had to put in the password there, and it was asking for XP user. And that was the ID for the user ID, and then I had to use the password, same password as my main Windows 7 password. Now, what's happened? I thought, you know, okay, if I go to XP's control panel there, if I change the my username there and remove the password there for XP, that would solve my problem putting in password every time. So that's what I did.
Oh, dear.
Now it still is asking for the same password.
I can't help you here. I'm sorry. I've just run out of time, and I have no idea what's going on. wow. I just don't know. There's no way. I'd have to come over and sit down and look at it. I'm sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And lo and behold, as always, the last segment of the show, he shows up like a little elf on the shelf, Dick DeBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and he's also a gadget hound. We call him the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I am great. I got this great gizmo, and the chat room won't let me put this on screen. Do you know about this? It's a clock, internet-connected clock called the LaMetric, LaMetric.com. You should get one of these. It lets you do tweets and YouTube followers, as well as time and weather and messages. And you could tie it to if this, then that. It's a Bluetooth speaker. You could tie it to your phone and play music. Not the greatest speaker in the world, but it doesn't really.
Right, okay.
Yeah, look, you see the weather. And it's like, it looks like a light bright. It's like a grid. And I know you like LEDs.
Right. No, actually, that form factor, Brookstone used to make a thing that you could put in six messages, but it wasn't connected to anything.
Yeah, this connects to your Wi-Fi. Right, so you could do that, but it also connects to your Wi-Fi. Yeah. Wow. LaMetric.com, but I guess I can't use it because the chairman doesn't like it. They're traditionalists. They like my old LCD atomic clock behind me.
So. Oh, well, then I do, too.
Yeah.
I do, too.
What do you? So Dick always brings us something cool. I thought I'd bring Dick something.
Yeah, so there was a Digital Focus event here in town last week, and we seem to be on a streak of weird gadgets, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
streak, this is all you've ever done.
That's true. I guess that's true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, some weirder than others. This little gadget is called Tap Do. And, you know, you can use your finger you tap it and you get into your phone. And so the premise here is, so you have five fingers, so now you can do five things. But wait, there is a separate fingerprint for the section of your finger.
Wait a minute, you're saying this is like a single button.
A single button,
but it
Leo.
Does five different things.
No, 20 different
what?
Things.
The
but
what?
You,
the what?
Leo, you have to remember the 20 parts of your hand.
that's the fleshy that part to you, the left of the
yes,
ring
I,
finger.
I said to the woman, how is this humanly possible? She said, well, you assign tasks to your fingers.
So you're wearing this on your wrist like a wristwatch.
Yes, exactly. Or it's going to come with a little belt loop. So then your middle finger is your music finger.
Sure.
So the thumb selects the music, and then the part under your thumb advances it.
So
then
it can tell which part of your hand you're touching it with?
Yes, exactly.
How does it know that?
Well, because you program it through your phone.
Oh, so it's like a fingerprint reader, kind of.
It's like, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So this way, as long as you're within Bluetooth range of your phone and you have an astounding memory of what...
this is not an April Fool's joke, folks. This is real.
No, it's not. It's not. And... It's on Kickstarter now. They're doing pretty well. It's going to be $100 or between $100 and $110. And I guess you can astound people with it.
Could you use this?
Oh, I, you know what? I could remember which of these five is my thumb, but not to do that. I'm trying to listen to music and I just shut my lights off. That would be me.
Wow. So this is Tap Do, the ingenious button. And how much is it?
It's going to be $100 to $110.
Wow. So you can get it for 100 euros on their Kickstarter project. Yeah. I'm not sure why it's in euros.
And they have their own website, which is tapdo.io.
It's an interesting idea.
Yeah, they're up to 40,000, almost $41,000. So somebody thinks that the world's smallest remote for everything is something they want.
Yeah. Wow. Touch do. Tap do.
Tap do.
Tap do. Touch do something else. Wow. Wow. All right. Well, always.
You have a good memory. I mean, this might have. You know what, Leo? You could switch cameras without doing anything. You could be sitting there.
You nailed the problem because I can't even remember the commands to tell Siri to get her to. I mean, you just. You shouldn't have to. It's too much to remember. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
You could have it do your password if you do. 123311144. That'd be kind of cool. Like, just like play a piano on it. I wonder if you could do that.
My wall safe just opened.
I I got it. I knew I would.
Oh, this voice thing is really not working out for me at all.
Open Dick Safe. Open Safe. Dick DiBartolo is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website. You can find out more about the Tap-Do and all the products he talks about. He's like, oh, man, he's like the king of gizmos. Everything's there, including his regular weekly show, gizwiz.tv. And, of course, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine from this guy right here. I mean, that's got to be worth something. Well, he's dead, but once he's dead, you can sell it.
Yes, exactly.
I'm sorry, Dick. Actually, there's something about working at Mad Magazine that makes you live a really long time.
Fortunately, yeah, the guy that does the fold-ins just turned 96.
It's like and he's still doing them. Jaffe. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Something about it. Mad Magazine's good for the longevity. If you want to win an autographed copy, go to gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz, and play the What the Heck Is It contest. A close-up picture of a gizmo or gadget. If you figure it out, you're in the running for 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. If you can't figure it out, come up with a clever wrong answer, and you're in the running for 24 copies of Mad Magazine. You do the math. Thanks, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. All right. See you next week.
See you next week. Sally, Grand Terrace, California. Hi, Sally. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my phone call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a 2012 Inspiron and had Windows 7.
I know it's a Dell. Tell your husband I know an Inspiron's a Dell.
Yeah. I have Windows 7, which was upgraded to Windows 12. I prefer to use... Windows 10. I prefer to use WordPerfect.
WordPerfect! WordPerfect! You should meet the guy who used DAC Easy Accounting. You guys would get together. WordPerfect! Wow.
I work for a law firm and I.
Sure. Did you start with a Wang writer?
Yes.
Yeah, so your fingers know those commands.
I started with a manual typewriter.
Well, we all did. Well, of a certain age. You know, my kids have no idea how we use those. No idea at all. So I loved WordPerfect. In fact, one of the reasons WordPerfect was an early success long before Microsoft Word is because it duplicated the commands from the Wang word processor, the dedicated word processor many law offices used. So it was an easy upgrade for you. Corel still sells it.
I know. And my problem, though, is I was preparing notes for my tax man, and I have an ergonomic Microsoft.
Those are nice.
Keyboard, which I have connected to the laptop, and in the middle of.
You know what? Can you hang on? Because the show is about to end in 20 seconds. I'm going to keep you on the line, and I'll help you off the air, okay? Just hang on for a second. Meanwhile, I want to thank Michael Cozio, our musical director. I'm going to thank Heather Hammond for answering the phones. I want to thank you. Happy Easter, Heather. Your bunny ears look great. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Sorry about that. Sally, they wouldn't let me go on, but I can help you now. So you're using WordPerfect. You're using a Microsoft ergonomic keyboard, which is nice. Keeps carpal tunnel at bay.
Yeah, I have neuropathy too, so.
Yeah, but you like the keyboard though, right?
I'm sorry?
You like that keyboard though, right? It helps?
Yes, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't use the keyboard. I tried disconnecting and reconnecting, I tried.
So the keyboard wasn't working with your Inspiron.
It was for.
And then it stopped. And then it stopped working.
It stopped.
And what was do you? Was it? Did it stop working when you upgraded to Windows 10?
No, I've had it for over 6 months.
Okay, and so it's just one day you're typing and nothing happens.
I'm getting the notes ready for the tax man, and it stops. So
and can you type in any other program, or all the programs stopped working?
Everything.
Yeah, your keyboard's broken.
Well, not really. I tried the laptop keyboard, couldn't get that. So
tried the on-screen keyboard.
Yeah, tried the on-screen, and
yeah, that works. Yeah, of course that would work. So can you? I hear your husband is so funny.
What?
She got through though. Sally got through. What's your husband's name, Sally?
Finally.
What's your husband's name?
Dave.
Okay, Dave. So here's the thing to try is: did you put that keyboard in the laptop, and you're saying it worked in the laptop?
Initially, yeah.
So you unplugged the Microsoft ergonomic keyboard, plugged it into the USB port on the laptop, and you were able to type on the laptop.
Well, you have to point and click.
Okay, that's not typing. Here's what I'm asking you, Sally. Here's what I'm asking. Can you use that broken Microsoft ergonomic keyboard on some other computer and it works?
Oh, we have to find
out.
So that's the first thing to try. Let me talk now. That's the first thing to try. Take that keyboard, put it on a different computer. It can even be a laptop or a desktop. It can be any other computer, and see if it can type. If it can't, it's broken, and you need a new one.
No, it's not broken, because I went on to Dell tech support. $300 later, he was going through everything, and he said, "You can't have Windows 10. That's your problem."
That's not your problem.
And
that's not your problem. He's a nitwit. Don't listen to him. I'm sorry you spent $300 on him. How did you get a hold of him?
Well, that's Dell.
How did you get a hold of him? Did you call him?
Yes, I called.
Okay. And you did it from a number that you saw on the website or somewhere?
No, we've used TechSupport before, okay. But it expired.
They actually told her what to do, a whole bunch of different things with the computer. Take the battery out, put it back in, and do this. And then it started working fine.
Oh, interesting. And then the keyboard worked.
And then it worked fine, and then all of a sudden it
And the keyboard on the laptop worked.
Yeah, they both worked. And then it wouldn't work.
Oh, you're telling me the laptop key... So, okay, I get it now. You're using the Microsoft keyboard on a laptop. And the laptop's physical keyboard did not broke as well. It wouldn't work either.
It won't work.
Aha. So now you're right. The Microsoft keyboard's not broken. Something's wrong with the laptop. And did you try? Huh?
That's what I told her.
Right, because
he said that the 10 is not usable. So he took 10 off.
Jeez.
No, he didn't. He didn't take it off. He told 10 was not compatible with her computer.
He told you should take 10 off.
Tell me, call in after we get the...
Dave, let me ask you a question. How did you get 10 on that laptop?
We downloaded it from Microsoft.
You manually downloaded it and installed it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Free download, yeah.
So that's a risky thing to do, because if you had gotten it, if Microsoft had offered it and said, here.
Yeah, they did.
It said, you're ready, it's time, you can upgrade now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Microsoft knows what hardware is compatible and what not, and... It's a strong indicator that Windows 10 is fine if they offer it to you. That's a very strong suggestion that Windows 10 is fine. The second strong suggestion is it worked fine for 6 months, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. My husband's laptop worked working fine.
So the advice you got from Dell was bogus.
And I told her it was bogus.
Yeah, Dave, you're right. So Dave, your husband, Sally, is very smart.
We call him Dr. Dave because he offers medical advice as well.
My ex-wife used to do that. She said, after my many years in medical school, she had zero. I think your problem is. It was always charming when she did it. It's charming.
Well, he's not charming.
Well, I can't help your marriage, but I might be able to fix that keyboard. Let's see. So the funniest thing is the keyboard driver, and of course all hardware needs a driver to talk to the operating system. The keyboard driver is one of the oldest functional drivers. It really should always work. In fact, yeah. I've never heard of a keyboard that you couldn't use with any version of Windows. It's that basic, right? And it's a it's a relatively recent Microsoft keyboard. It's a USB keyboard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what has probably happened is, and this the evidence of this is that the keyboard on the laptop won't work either, is that the keyboard driver itself is damaged, which can happen. You know, the hard drives have little issues. One bit goes flipped and the thing won't work anymore. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't be too hard to fix, I think. I think you want to just update and I can't remember what they call the keyboard driver. What I would suggest is go to Dell. And they may have done this. Did they go to the Dell site and have you download Dell drivers?
No.
Okay.
No, they did not.
So that's the first thing. If I were that guy,
okay.
I wish you could get your $300 back.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to tell her to call and cancel it.
Yeah. If I were that guy, I would say, well, the first thing I want you to do, yeah, it's the human interface or HID driver that covers mice, keyboards, etc. First thing I would do is I would have you go to the Dell site for that model Inspiron. You know, when you go to the Dell site, you enter in your service key.
Right.
It's on the bottom of your computer. And you enter that in, it'll take you to the right page. And just download all the drivers on that page, all the Windows 10 drivers on that page. And if it doesn't have Windows 10 drivers, that is one indicator that they don't expect it to run Windows 10. But I bet it does. And if it doesn't, try Windows 7 drivers.
Okay.
Or Windows 8. Get the latest drivers and then install them all. You don't have to remove the old one. Just install the new ones. See if that works.
We have a program, a driver updater program.
Yeah. Is it from Dell?
And it said all drivers.
No,
were,
from ADG.
All drivers.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about third-party versions of those. If it came from Dell, okay. But you have AVG on there?
Yeah.
Take that off immediately. This may be another source of your problem. Security software often modifies how hardware runs. So if you've got any security software on there, you don't need it. Windows 10 has its own antivirus. It's very secure. Take all of the third-party antivirus, anti-mouse, just get it all off. And you may need to go, Dave, to the site itself, the AVG site or the Norton site or the Symantec site. You may need to go to those sites and find a removal tool because antivirus software doesn't want to just uninstall. Then the bad guys would just run automatic uninstallers and get rid of it. So they usually leave stuff lying around. You want to clean it up as best you can.
Okay.
Get rid of that stuff. That's always going to cause problems. And by the way, makes your system less secure.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, may it come with, Windows, the companies often bundle trialware of McAfee or some other.
Right.
Yeah,
uninstall that always. That stuff's terrible.
We did.
Your other one that you was a sponsor of yours,
ESET. Or Webroot, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to use that.
Just get rid of it all. You don't need it on Windows 10.
No, okay. No, none at all.
No. Windows 10 has very good antivirus. Truth is, antiviruses don't help you because they only catch old viruses. And you very rarely get an old virus. You almost always get a new one.
Yeah.
So most security experts say it's a bad idea to rely on antiviruses. And we know in many cases antiviruses could reduce your security because if they have flaws, they can open your system up. Both Norton and Symantec and McAfee have had flaws of that kind. AVG as well. So just uninstall all that stuff. You don't need an antivirus. Mostly it's about what you do. Don't download software you don't know. If it says update your flash and, I have a copy right here, don't do that. Stuff like that. Yeah. You know what not to do. Don't open attachments from email, even if it comes from people you know, unless you're expecting it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Antivirus doesn't really help, and it can often hurt. But then that may or may not be the problem. If in worst case scenario, if downloading the drivers from Dell doesn't help, what you may want to do is back up everything. You have the WordPerfect disks.
Yes.
Yeah. Back up everything and wipe the computer and install a clean version of Windows 10.
It's an old one. It's a 2003.
and you don't have a more recent version?
No.
Well, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
I got no problem with it. If you have the disks or not, download the installer. You probably have a serial number. Nowadays, most software isn't distributed by disk. It's distributed by download, and if you have a serial number, you can activate it.
Okay.
So we don't need any antivirus.
No.
Windows 10. That's on our computer. Great.
No. In fact, I highly recommend against it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, don't listen to my ads.
Don't listen to your ads. Listen to Dave, because he will tell you.
Yeah. Listen to Dave. Dr. Dave knows. Those ads are gone.
Well, we love you, Leo.
Thank you. So you may have to reinstall Windows 10. Sometimes installing an upgrade can cause problems. The fact that it worked until recently tells me there's something else going on, like the driver failed, the HID drivers failed.
Yeah, I thought about the drivers, and I mentioned it to the Dell guy, but he's from the subcontinent.
Yes. Yeah. Don't blame them. They have a notebook. Yeah. They just have a notebook. They aren't really encouraged or hired to have, you know, the initial level, although you are paying money for it, which should be a little bit better. That should be the Dell Gold service. They're not really – what you want is somebody who could think for themselves. But these guys are going through a notebook.
Yeah. Well, I had to do exactly what you told her that she might have to do to my Dell, which is probably about 10 years old. It's a studio. And when I had 10 on it for – 8 or 9 months, and then it started just every time I tried to sign in, it would just my sign in page would jump to the top and then come back down and wouldn't. And so I finally just.
When the laptop keyboard doesn't work, it's sometimes laptop keyboards are USB devices, believe it or not. So do other USB devices work on that computer?
On mine?
You haven't tried anything. You really
I would try some other. It's possible your USB hardware got fried.
Your mouse is working.
My mouse is working.
Oh, okay. That's USB. All right.
Oddly enough, I can sign in, but it doesn't show
up. Wait a minute. You can type your name to log in?
I can type my password to log in.
And that works.
And that works.
And you're doing that on the Microsoft ergonomic keyboard?
No. I did it on the laptop keyboard.
I know. It wouldn't work.
But one thing I wanted to tell you.
Now I'm baffled.
When he took over, he would go back and forth, and I could use the ergonomic keyboard, and I could use the laptop keyboard. And then he took off.
Twice it worked.
It worked, and then it stopped working. Yeah, here's what you really want to do, and it's a pain in the butt, but this is what you absolutely want to do. You're going to Google Microsoft Windows Media Creation Tool for Windows 10. Once you've installed Windows 10 on that computer, you don't need a serial number. You're going to download Windows 10 from Microsoft and make a bootable USB key. And when you run the Windows installer, you're going to wipe the drive. Start from scratch.
Okay.
Start from scratch. There is a way to do this. I want you to start from scratch. I want you to erase everything, start over, because I just think it's probably a conflict between the old driver and the new driver, something like that.
And wipe out the 7.
Wipe everything out. Then reinstall Corel. Reinstall. You know, restore your data. That's why you want to have a good backup.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to do all of that, there are in the recovery menu on Windows 10, there are options for kind of, you know, middle ground recoveries. But truthfully, at this point, I think the best bet would be to wipe it and install Windows 10. If the keyboard still does not work, there's a hardware flaw.
Yeah.
If it does work.
I don't think it does.
No, it does work then. Now, for all I know, a 2003 version of Corel WordPerfect might install its own weird keyboard drivers, for all I know. So So try, you know, after you reinstall Windows 10, don't install anything else yet. Make sure everything works good.
Okay.
Well.
Yeah, I've had, well, this was an old CD. It's from 2003,
yeah.
And I installed it in my 2012 computer.
That's fine. I mean, if it works, it works.
And it worked.
Yeah. There's a lot of diagnostic things you could try that maybe the Dell guy did. Did you boot into safe mode?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, no.
Try booting into safe mode, see if your keyboard works. If it does, then it's definitely a driver issue or a compatibility issue with something else in the software.
I had started to suggest that to Sally, but we were in the middle of trying to do these.
Yeah, give that a try. So there's you understand. There's a lot of little intermediate steps you can take. Oh. The yeah. best thing, if you've got the time and the energy, is to just wipe it and start over.
Okay.
But at least that'll eliminate any software issues. It could be you have hardware issues.
Yeah. So go on to Windows 10.
No.
Media Creation Tool. Dave got it.
Microsoft
Media Creator. And you're going to create a Windows 10 boot. You have a USB. You need an 8-gig USB key.
Yeah.
You're going to create a boot USB key. You're going to boot to that on the computer, on the Inspiron. Install Windows 10. Clean. Wipe the drive. Start clean. Don't install on top of anything. I mean, there may be, honestly, if I were there, this is the nuclear option. If I were there, there are some intermediate steps I might try, like repairing the Windows 10 install, checking to see the device, looking at your device manager. He must have done this. Did he have you open device manager, Windows key X?
He took over everything. And
yeah, I mean, he must have looked at the drivers. And
yeah. Yeah.
Leo, do you know anything about light bulbs, LED light bulbs?
I do.
I keep buying the bug ones for outside, the yellow ones, and I put them in my outdoor lights, which are all the exact same model and make of, I bought everything the same, and these are Philips, and they last for about anywhere from 2 to 3 months.
And no, they should last 40 years.
Yes.
Yeah, they start strobing.
Oh, okay. So here's how LED light bulbs don't dim. They're on or they're off. If you get dimmable light bulbs, what they do is they flash at a really high rate, and they dim by flashing faster or slower.
Oh, well, that's what they're doing.
So don't use a dimmer with those light bulbs.
No, I don't know.
All right. Well, then they think maybe if the voltage is varying on that outdoor light, that's what's happening.
Yeah, outdoor for the front and the back.
They last for a couple of months, and then they start strobing, and my poor neighbors.
Yeah, that's annoying, isn't it? Yeah. Take them inside and see if they work in a normal socket. It may just be that the voltage to your outside lights isn't very consistent.
I've got a brand new meter on the outside that they installed when they put my solar system on my roof, a $2,000 electrical panel.
Oh, wow.
Thought that would have
you'd think
brought it all up to snuff, but
Philips are good. Philips are very good ones. They're not cheesy ones.
Oh yeah, but they'll start strobing and then they'll stop and then they won't work anymore. And you know
try getting dimmable ones the next time and see if those work better.
Dimmable ones.
Dimmable yeah, because that would respond to voltage fluctuations in a more sensible way. Right.
It's making me crazy.
I bet. That's terrible.
It gives me my migraine.
Sally and Dave, nice to talk to you both.
Thank you so much, Leo.
My pleasure. Have a great day. Happy Easter. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.